From the shadows of the radio towers, this is the Gay PHX Podcast. Your community radio on demand.
It's gonna be a good day. And everything is going to go my way. It's gonna be a good day. The sun is shining bright and it's here to stay.
This week on the Gay PHX Podcast, can you feel it in the air? Leather, legacy, and a whole lot of anticipation because it's officially Mr. Anvil Phoenix title contest weekend. Howdy, I'm Billy Foster. I'm your host to the Gay PHX Podcast. And all across the valley, the energy is building. From early gatherings to late night chaos, this isn't just another weekend. It's a full-on celebration of community, identity, and the people who show up and stand proud and represent. And if you can't be everywhere at once, don't worry, we got you covered. We're bringing you along for the ride with updates all week long from Thursday night kickoff to Friday's meet and greet moments, all the way leading up to Saturday's main event, streaming live so you can be a part of it no matter where you are, because that's what we do here at Gay PHX. We don't just talk about the community, we show up for it. Then we shift gears and get a little bit more personal. This week, we're sitting down with Heather Hester, a powerful voice in the LGBTQ plus space, known for helping families move from confusion to connection, from fear to real understanding. This is one of those conversations that matters, the kind that reminds you how important it is to listen, to learn, and to keep showing up for each other. So whether you're tuning in for your commute, at home, or getting ready for the big weekend ahead, you're in the right place. Now, before we get into all that, you know what time it is. Brian's Hot 3 is coming up next, and trust me, this week it's stacked. Brian, take it away.
You're listening to Gay PHX, where community comes first.
Hey, 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 Phoenix, tighten that harness, fluff that fur, and check your reflection one more time. Because this week, this week is giving leather, laces, loud music, and just enough bad decisions to keep things interesting. We're stepping into a weekend where the energy is unapologetic, the outfits are optional, but highly encouraged, and the vibes are somewhere between community celebration and who did I just lock eyes with and why am I suddenly sweating? Because when Anvil Weekend rolls in, when Melrose turns up the volume, and when Charlie's is stacked wall to wall with talent, sweat, and sequins, you don't watch the weekend, you survive it, thrive in it, and maybe text about it later. This is Brian's Hot 3, your leather polish, glitter soap, desert den daddy, approved guide to where you need to be this week. Trust me, hydration is not an option. Hot pick number one, Mr. Anvil, the judge's reception, Friday, April 10th at 6 p.m. International Men of Leather kicks off the weekend with the judge's reception and leather happy hour, and this is where the energy starts building real fast. Mr. Anvil Phoenix Weekend, if you ever wanted to be in a room where confidence is worn like a second skin, this is it. Hosted by Ben Calderon, Mr. Anvil Phoenix 2025, this is your chance to step into a room full of confidence, community, and just the right amount of, I dress like this on purpose, and yes, I look good. Come mingle, meet the community, and maybe scope out your early favorites, because baby, the competition hasn't even started yet, and it's already heating up. Hot pick number two, Club Nocturnal, Rockero Night, and Thunderbird Lounge, Friday, April 10th. The doors open at 8, and music starts at 9. Alright, choose your fighters. Spanish rock legends versus English rock icons, and the only wrong answer is staying home. Club Nocturnal is bringing a full rock-on battle of the culture. Where the guitars scream, the crowd sings louder, and at some point, someone is absolutely going to flip their hair like they're in a music video. You're dancing, you're singing, you're maybe screaming lyrics you only know half, and somehow you still look hot doing it. This is loud, sweaty, high-energy fun, the kind where you walk out thinking, who was that? And why did we bond over that one song? Hot pick number three, the Saguaro Cup Sports Festival Weekend at Charlie's. This goes Friday, April 10th to Sunday, April 12th, starting at 9 p.m. This isn't just a party, this is a weekend takeover. Saguaro Cup Weekend is pulling in teams from across the country, which means the bar is packed, the energy is high, and the talent pool just got real competitive. Friday, April 10th at 9 is the check-in and opening party. Wristbands on, don't lose it, don't take it off, don't test fate. And teams from across the country rolling in with energy that says we came to compete and also absolutely party. Saturday, April 11th from 6 to 8 is the La Lega Phoenix. 9 p.m. is the Selena Experience. This is where the drama, the music, and the hips that do not lie all collide into one unforgettable night. Sunday, April 12th, 7 p.m. is the Rihanna Replay. 8 p.m. Wet Jock Contest. Cash prizes. And just when you thought you could behave, Sunday said absolutely not. Hydrate, stretch, make good choices, or at least memorable ones. This just in, special announcements from your gay PHX. Saturday, April 11th, this is the main event. Mr. Anvil Phoenix 2026 title contest is here, and we are talking leather, presence, personality, and a whole lot of yes sir. Contestants will battle it out across multiple categories, all for that title. And here's the part we're very excited about. Gay PHX is going live. That's right, for the first time, you'll be able to tune in and experience the energy, the competition, and the crowd as it happens. And when the contest wraps, so does the stream, but oh, we're not done. Presented by the Arizona Men of Leather, the parking lot party takes over. This includes an outdoor BDSM dungeon, a puppy mosh pit, cigar lounge, boot black, vendors. This is where things go from event to full-on experience. Proceeds benefit the Leather Archives and Museum. So yes, you're having a good time and supporting something bigger. Sunday, April 12th, 1 p.m., Anvil's 16th Anniversary Party, Victory Beer Bash. Celebrate 16 years of the Anvil. Join us for the Anvil 16th Anniversary Party featuring a Victory Beer Bash and cookout from 2 to 5. Don't miss this celebration of Phoenix's premier leather bar, part of the Mr. Anvil Phoenix 2026 weekend. Phoenix, this is not a casual weekend. This is a show up, show out, and maybe don't plan anything early for the next morning kind of weekend. This community, kink, music, competition, and celebration all colliding into one beautifully chaotic desert moment. They're just waiting for you to step into them. So wear the outfit, say yes to the invite, and if someone asks, are you staying out late? Just smile, you already know the answer. You are seen, you are wanted, and yes, someone is definitely checking you out right now. And to you, yeah, you listening right now, you're the reason this all works. This community, this energy, this platform, it doesn't exist without you showing up, tuning in, and being a part of it. So keep coming out, keep supporting, keep being exactly who you are, because that's what makes Phoenix shine. Until next time, coming to you from the shadows of the radio towers, I'm Brian, your Desert Den Daddy, reminding you that this week isn't about playing it safe. It's about showing up, showing out, and maybe leaving this a story you're almost tell next week. And that's what's hot.
Want all the details? Head over to GabePHX.com, your one-stop shop for queer events, promos, and everything happening in the Valley.
This is what community sounds like.
This is Amanda Renfrew, enrolled agent with The Tax Person, with your tax year countdown. If you're avoiding filing because past tax experiences felt unsafe or invalidating, you are not alone. You deserve affirming, trauma-aware tax support that meets you where you are and without judgment. Get support with a free 15-minute consult at thetaxperson.com or look for me as The Tax Person on socials.
More stories, more voices, more pride. You're tuned in to the Gay PHX Podcast.
Today on Gay PHX, we're focusing on what really happens inside of a family when someone comes out. The fear, the uncertainty, and the moment everything begins to shift towards understanding and support. Our guest today helps parents and allies move through that transition with honesty, clarity, and courage. Please welcome to the Rainbow Tinted Microphone, Heather Hester. Oh, Heather, thank you so very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. This is so much fun.
So what first drew you into supporting parents and allies of LGBTQ plus youth?
That's a many-layered question. The short answer is our experience as a family and what we went through when my son, my oldest son, first came out. I have four kids, and he came out almost 9 years ago when he was 16 years old. And we didn't have any idea. Now, of course, I look back and I think, oh my gosh, how did we not have any idea? But we didn't. And so it was a surprise in many ways. One, that I'm grateful every single day that our response was from the beginning, we love you. How can we support you? And it was also, we have no idea what we're doing. We have no idea what you need. And he was going through it. And so it was a lot of learning in a very short period of time. And when you have kids that are, at the time they were 16, 13, 11, and 9, it made for a little bit of a challenge. And so we had about 18 months that were really hard and scary. And when you hear about struggles that young people, and I don't think it's just young people, that you do hear a lot of times specifically to young people coming out, he checked the boxes with all of the things. And so when we finally got to a place that was like, oh, okay, we can take a breath now. I thought, you know, this was really hard. We had a hard time finding resources. We had a hard time finding support. We were really scared. He was really scared. And I was, this is insanity. There are thousands, if not millions, of other families out there who are going through this exact same thing, feeling exactly the same way. And so I'm going to create what I couldn't find. That is how I got to where I am.
We love
now.
That. That sounds very familiar as far as some of that. Now, how was it to be that honest to your son to say that you're not equipped to this? As children, we always look up to our parents and we think that they know everything. And then to hear that, how was that? How did that help him understand?
It did. And I think it was really, initially it was hard for us to be able to say that, right? To be able to say, we don't know the answer. Because you're right. Like, parents are, in theory, supposed to know the answers. But the reality is, it's impossible. Nobody knows everything. And a lot of the times, parenting is just, you're going by the seat of your pants and making decisions on the fly and tapping into perhaps what you learned from your own parents or what you just read in a book or what your best friend is doing as a parent, right?
Isn't a book that comes with a baby, there are hundreds of books that have written about how to like care for a baby and a child, but are there many or any for helping a child come out or come to terms with who they are?
There are really not. I wrote one. And
but
before that, there were a handful that were very helpful for me on our journey. This is a book for parents of gay kids. You could not talk about a more straightforward title than that. And that was extremely helpful. And along the way, I've found ones that have been really great for understanding language, learning the language. And then I wrote a book specifically for parents to understand the process that your child goes through, as well as the process that you're going through as a parent, and to really be okay with not knowing all the answers, with being vulnerable, with saying, gosh, I don't know, or I really screwed that up. Let me do that again. I'm really sorry. There were things that we did at the beginning that we laugh about now, but in one of the very first questions my husband asked my son was, are you sure? Like the worst question you could ask. I guess there's probably worse, but it's up there.
I'll give that one a pass because that's like just everyone's first initial reaction. I think that's more of a knee jerk than a thoughtful question.
It is. But I also talk about it because I think it's really important for people to understand the context behind that, which is if your child has gotten up the courage to tell you that they are, whatever their sexual orientation or gender identity is, whatever they're coming out to you as, that is not something they decided overnight. It's not a decision, first of all. It is something that they have become, it's been weeks, if not months, if not years of understanding, this is who I am.
It's not, do I want to play the piano? Do I want to play the violin?
Right.
It's not those kind of choices.
It's not those. It is not, I think I like mint chocolate chip ice cream. It's not that. So I think I I do make that point because I think it is important for people to understand this isn't a whim on a whim. This isn't a choice. This isn't a decision. This isn't a lifestyle. I don't like any of those words, and they do trigger me. So I will just share that.
It's a realization. Now,
exactly.
You had said before that looking back, you should have known, but you didn't. Is it because you didn't want to see the signs? Is it because it just wasn't anything you thought of because it wasn't anything you encountered? And what was it that made it seem like now you look at it, you're like, oh, it's obvious now. But why wasn't it? Why didn't it feel obvious then?
That is such a good question. It's several things. First, We didn't have any friends who had kids who were out. So it wasn't something that was actively talked about. Mm-hmm. We just didn't know. Like, it wasn't, neither one of us had anybody in our family who was out. And it wasn't something that we were looking for to say. The other piece, which I think is the bigger piece, is that while my husband, both of us grew up in quote unquote religious families, his family was much more open and accepting and loving and affirming. I grew up in a very conservative Christian home, evangelical Christian home. And so there were a lot of things that were programmed in me that I think did not allow me to see these things in my son. And so when that moment that he had the courage to come out to us really set off just a plethora of occurrences or realizations or of shifts within our family. And one of them was like really beginning to open our eyes to understanding, to seeing, to realizing those different things that we needed to unlearn that didn't serve us anymore.
So now when a family is going through these early stages of coming out, that coming out moment, what emotions do you most often see surface?
Fear. Lots of fear. Worry. Some anger, but most of the emotions stem from fear. I think that's probably the easiest way to say it.
And how does fear typically show up in parents, even when they deeply love their child?
It can show up and worry about their future. It's going to be so much harder for them. Worry about their safety, whether it's out in the real world or whether it's at school, depending on how old the child is. Fear in that, oh, this is just a phase. This can't be real. This is something they're just going through. They learned this on the internet. Their friend just came out, and so now they are coming out too. And I think all of those things are fear-based.
What helps a parent move out of fear then?
I think, first of all, just saying it out loud in a space that is... So when I work with parents, I work with parents one-on-one. So there's not other people around, and it allows them to say things perhaps in a very messy way. But when you're able to say things out loud and really hear it, and connect with that as, I see what that is now, right? Being able to say, that's something that I'm afraid of, and then start to connect perhaps where it came from or what it's pointing toward, who you've heard say it. Like, all these different pieces are what begin to help to unravel that and help the parent begin to shift to, oh, I can be concerned, but I trust my child. I believe and there's so much power in being able to even just say that to yourself, let alone saying that to your child, right?
And what does it look like for a parent to try and unlearn those habits, those long-held biases, those?
Oh, it can look a lot of different ways because it depends on where it came from, right? It depends on, did it come from their religious upbringing? What are those beliefs? What is it intertwined with? And how does that become unwrapped or untwisted? Is it the stuff that they heard in the community that they live in or the community that they were brought up in. And so it's taking one belief or one statement at a time and first asking all of those questions. Where did this come from? How did this make you feel? And then being able to show evidence to whether it's to dispel that, or a lot of times when a parent is able to just talk through, they will answer these things for themselves, right? They will begin to unwind it for themselves, and you'll see the light bulb go off like, I see how this has affected me, or I see how this has made me think this. And you're telling me, or this, all of this evidence over here, all of this research actually shows this. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I am big into researching and having a lot of fact-based, evidence-based, real-life, people-based information available for parents, and that's certainly helpful.
Versus the theories that other people have contrived with have no right. basis of fact.
Yes, as opposed to the othering and all of the fear-based garbage that you hear from the talking heads or the people who are out there spreading the nonsense.
Right.
And a lot of those things are so easy to dispel because you can just be like, oh my goodness. And there is an element of, as much as like internally, there are times where I'm like, it's not taking that shame piece out of there and being like, okay, I can see why you think that. I can see where that came from. Now, this is how we unravel that.
And in that same vein, I assume that you're doing this internally. How do you guide parents to do their own internal reactions without placing work or guilt or something on the child?
Oh my goodness. First of all, I say that out loud. And I think that's something that parents don't even, they're A, either not aware that they're doing, or B, they aren't aware that they should not be doing, right? So they're thinking they're being helpful or showing their child how affirming they are or accepting they are by asking them a million questions and showing them, look, I'm doing the work, or look, I'm really curious. Where in reality, but the parent, what I teach them to do is their own work and to learn on their own. And that's one of the best ways that you can affirm is to, it's not your child's responsibility to teach you and to hold your hand through your own process. Parents have their own very specific process that is separate from the child's process. And it's the parent's responsibility to go through their process while also understanding and supporting their child through their process.
So in today's polarized climate, what are new challenges that families face that weren't there when you were going through this 9 years ago?
It's a lot scarier. There's a lot more discrimination, especially if you are part of the trans community. There's a lot of rhetoric, a lot more dangerous rhetoric that is out there that people just need to be aware of. So I think that in some ways that concern, the safety concern, is very real and something that is frustrating as a parent, and it's scary as a parent because you know that I can't do anything about it, right? As a parent, we can't, as singular people, do anything about it. What we can do is teach our children how to be safe, whether they are still in K through 12 or whether they are in college or whether they are out in the real world. But it's also using our own voices to speak up. And to whether that's teaching just the people around us, our extended family, our friends, or if you are so inclined to go out and protest, to go out and use your voice. And yes, that is scary, especially if you live in a blue state, especially if there are other things going on right now that are in your community. And I think the two easiest ways and probably most profound ways to show support is to first let your child know that you love them unconditionally, exactly as who they are right now in this moment in time. And second, to believe them. When they tell you who they are, believe them.
That's a Maya Angelou quote, right?
It is.
Yeah. I know.
And it translates, doesn't it?
It does, yes.
Yes. Because I think actually when she said it, she meant it in a very different way than what I meant it. But
right.
How I mean it. But it translates.
It does. It does. Right. It really does. Now, how does curiosity and listening fit into this process for a parent?
Like that. Curiosity, when you allow yourself to move from judgment, which is fear-based. So when we are like sitting in that, I'm so worried, I'm so afraid for you, all the fear, right? That causes us to be judgmental. When we consciously become curious and start asking open-ended questions of wanting to learn, wanting to understand, wanting to grow, that shift is huge, not just for your relationship with your child, but for you as a human being and your own personal growth. And then listening is a skill that most of us think we know or do well, when in reality, we don't. Most people listen to respond. So we're listening for certain cues, we're listening for certain words or phrases, and we're already formulating our answer or the next thing we want to say while the person is still talking. Listening, especially with our kids, is a full body experience. It's not just hearing them and really focusing on what they're saying, but it's what your body is saying to them, right? So you're whether you're sitting or standing, but standing toward them, not having your arms crossed, right? Paying attention to that, paying attention to your facial expression. Like they're watching, especially anybody in the LGBTQ plus community is hyper-vigilant. They are paying attention to the smallest cues. And a lot of times they don't realize they are, but they are the smallest look of your eye or twitch of your mouth or movement of your body subconsciously signals different things to them. So it is important to be aware of your body and what your body is saying to them, and that all these pieces can help you be a better listener, so that your child feels heard and seen.
Along those same lines, what are some common mistakes that even well-intentioned parents make, and how can they correct when that happens?
Absolutely. So good. Yeah. And in addition to the things that I just mentioned, one thing that as a parent, I think is so, we all do it. It is just natural that when your child is in pain or sad or angry, we want to fix. We want them to feel better. We want to help them feel better, right? And so when they come to us with whatever those things are, our response is fix, right? We want you to feel better. When what they really need is, again, just to be heard, to be validated. So they're is a way to shift yourself out of that, like noticing, first of all, you have to notice that energy in yourself. Like when you realize this is so uncomfortable for me, I want to fix this, to take a breath and know that what your child needs most is for you to say, yeah, I hear you. That really sucks. Or I am so sorry that happened to you. And then ask a follow-up question, something that lets them know that you hear them, that you hear what they've been going through, and that you want to know more. And keeping it open-ended will help you move out of that fix-it energy where you just want to say, okay, this is what you need to do, right?
So you want to shift it from fix-it to support them.
Yeah.
Does that mean a mental shift of you're always a parent, so your goal as a parent is to fix, as you say? Does that mean you have to shift your mentality to being a friend? in that manner? How do you still be parent but not fix?
That is a great question. The job of the parent is almost never to fix, but to guide and to teach. And that's a nuanced, it's nuanced, right? There's no one way to say how that is done. When you find yourself in situations with your child, obviously, if it is a situation of danger or safety or something like that, then by all means, you jump in with directives. I think what I am offering is that when your child comes to you with a problem, just in general, a problem, that first letting them know that you hear them, that you hear and see the problem, or that it allows them to relax enough and to give you enough information that once they've shared, you can then say, hey, I have some observations here that I'd like to share. Or is it okay if I let you know what I'm thinking or what this brought up for me? Or I have some concerns. Is it okay if I share them with you right now? It's just shifting the language, and it's shifting the language to be more of a back and forth communication, which is different than a friendship, but it's also different than a power that kind of perhaps what you and I were brought up with, right?
Right.
Where the parent was in control and the child was not, and there wasn't any back and forth communication, so to speak.
Back when children were told what to do.
Exactly. And there was not a, but this is what I'm thinking, right? It didn't matter what you were thinking.
Right.
It didn't matter what you were feeling.
Because I said so.
It's the shift out of that into more of a, and it really ultimately what this also does is it teaches your child how to communicate in a much more healthy way so that they can translate that into their friendships and to their relationships, whether it's with a romantic partner or a work relationship or their own children down the road.
So for parents that come from strict religious or cultural backgrounds, how do you help them move forward? What do you offer them?
Oh, that is a great question, because that's what I came from. And I will tell you, so first of all, I offer them my story, because I think a lot of people learn well through stories. And I have another story of another lady that I actually learned from myself, who was very helpful in a lot of religious kind of, whether you want to call it deconstruction or unlearning. But when Connor, my oldest, came out, literally in that moment, when he said to me, Mom, I'm gay, in my brain, I thought, there's no way that this kid is going to hell. None. That was my first thought. And because that's what I had grown up being taught, right? That's what I had heard. That was what I was told was in the Bible. And I took a lot of time right there at the beginning. That had nothing to do. Connor was not involved with it. It was all of my own personal work where I needed to understand. And I did a lot of reading. I did a lot of searching for people who had either been through or had written books or had were biblical scholars who spoke on it, and really did a lot of breaking down. So that is what I share. I offer people this information to do their own work. It's not something that I can say, that's just not true and you have to believe me.
Well, right? Religion is a personal journey. It's very interesting. I did not grow up in a religious household, but my father said religion is something deeply personal and you'll figure your zone out.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh,
yeah.
All right. Okay. And so I was just left, and I realized that there was a buffet of selections to choose and learn from. And I gathered pieces from each to form my own basis kind of thing, and didn't realize that's not the norm.
That is not the norm. However, what a gift, because that is a lot of people have to do a lot of unlearning to get to that place.
Right.
Of, Oh, actually, there are a lot of options out there, and there are a lot of different belief systems, and there's not just one right one. And, you know, what I and a lot of people who do come specifically from the Christian traditions, there's a lot of control there, and there's a lot of fear built into, if you don't believe this way, then you're going to hell, which is why that was my first thought. I've been taught gay people go to hell.
Right.
Well, I thought, there's no way my kid's going to hell. That was such a definitive, it wasn't even a question. It was like, he's not going to go to hell. I know that he's not. I know that in my body, I can feel it. Now I need to figure out why it is I feel that so strongly when my entire life I've been told something very different.
And how do you free yourself from that?
I think it took me many years of very deep personal work to free myself of that. And it was done through a lot of reading, through working with different people and all different kinds of traditions, and a lot of journaling, a lot of just really thinking. And what it boils down to, honestly, is coming back to trusting myself, trusting my own, the information that my own body is giving me, and really listening. And my personal belief, it sounds like similar to you, is that there are these beautiful things to choose from. I do believe that there is a higher power. I do believe that I have a lot of, I guess, loosely similar beliefs to at least believing in a higher power. It's just so much more love-based and inclusive and not controlling. Mm-hmm. Not saying you have to believe this one way or else. And anybody who doesn't look or act this way is going to hell, which that piece was easy to get rid of. I was like, oh, great. I don't have to think that. A lot of these things are super freeing for me to be like, wait, this isn't required, or this isn't, I can think differently. I know that sounds extreme, but it's true.
Well, no, again, I call it deprogramming, because when you are told something over and over and you grow up with it, you're programmed to believe these things, and you to undo that programming or to unlearn it takes a lot of effort, a lot of work, because that's why they become habits. That's why it starts so young.
Exactly. Why do you think that turning point's trying to get into colleges?
So I own theory of why the Ellisons want the WB, Warner Brothers. So, because Warner Brothers also has a big comic library, and that's the way into the youth.
Wow. I hadn't even thought about that. Oh, thank you. Thanks for that.
I don't mean to scare people, but
no, it's so true though. I think it's also helpful when you are able to be able to connect those dots and be like, oh,
these are bigger tides than people even realize.
The
whole media conglomeration, this consolidation of media is trouble. It's concerning. Oh. You know,
big time.
People don't realize,
big time.
Like, Paramount has pushed individual artists who used to make a living off of making fan memorabilia. They raised the licensing 2,000%. That's not out there on CNN. People aren't talking about that. But I hear these artists that I know that used to make a living, they can't do it anymore. And now all of a sudden, there's ads all over the place for the Paramount shop. These are the things that happen that if you're not paying attention to, you don't realize it's hard to connect those dots. There's so much.
Right.
That, you know, it's designed to be that way right now.
And it's almost a full-time job to pay attention to everything that's going on. It's a full-time job. Hey. I think it's almost impossible, actually, to keep track of everything.
That's why I didn't talk radio for the longest time, because it was a full-time job to stay up. I was like, I may as well just make this my job then.
Yeah. And even that, I mean, I think that it is really difficult to, especially now and the information environment that we're in, to be able to, not only is there just so much, but it's also discerning what is true and what is not. What is, we could probably have a whole separate conversation right? on this. But it does back to the, it does help with the deconstruction, the understanding, the opening of your eyes and of your mind. And that's exactly what they don't want.
Right.
And they being
the people that want control. It's still literally about exactly. control, just like you're talking about.
It is.
It's yep. all about control. And
fear.
Even the, I'll probably get in trouble for this. Even the whole Democrat versus Republican is a misnomer. It's really the haves and the have nots, and the haves are the ones that are in control. They don't like it when the have nots get more control.
Yeah, you've heard some that's been the most recent. It's not left versus, it's up versus down. And it does make so much more sense. And I think, too, when people can connect with even the haves versus the have-nots, understanding that the haves, that is really such a small percentage.
Right.
Right? That most of us are in the have-nots, even if we're not without a home or exceedingly poor, we're still in there. And that's who we need to be fighting for. And just paying attention to the trajectory of what's going on.
And along that same lines of deprogramming and unlearning, what's interesting to me, and maybe you can help me try and reconcile this with what you've experienced, I have a hard time understanding why people in our community want to separate the T from our community, from the trans. Why are they trying to put this divide between the trans and us? What we were able to overcome the idea that what they said about us wasn't true, so we came out and we're here and proud. Why is it not? Why can't we offer that to the trans community? Why is it I'm seeing so much backlash? I don't understand it.
I don't either. Honestly, I'm with you on that. I really okay. don't understand, especially for people who understand the history and know that the trans community is fighting the same fight that the gay community fought 40 years ago, right? 30 right. years ago, 20. And so why on earth would you not want to use the what you've learned and just the fact that you are a little more safe than they are? And I think that's also why it's so important that allies are out there doing the work, because I think the community as a whole is exhausted. And it shouldn't be all on you. That's what being an ally is.
What are long-term habits to help families stay supporters after the initial coming out?
Open communication is one. And with open communication, I think that also implies keeping an open mind, keeping an open heart, knowing that you are not always going to have the answer. And also that your child, young adult, emerging adult, might come to you with something that you either may not have heard of, that you may feel uncomfortable with, that you don't agree with. And that's okay. So I think there's that, just the general adopting and honing your ability to have open communication or have a more open communication style with your child. I think another habit, and I don't know if this is a habit or if it's more of just a behavior, like shift in behavior, which I guess is a habit, but many of us were brought up in homes where our parents, we did not learn from our parents how to take accountability or how to say I was wrong or I made a mistake. Gosh, I screwed that up. I think that is a very important skill, practice to have as a parent, is to be able to, I think we'll just use the word accountability as the overarching description there, to be accountable. And I think maybe the third habit is to always, I'm trying to think of the wording that I want to use here, sorry. To shift from that fixed mindset, like it has to be this certain way, to having that, to be open to learning, to be curious, to
fluid thinking.
Just make that to be curious. Yeah. Yeah.
Now it looks like I got ahead of my skis a little bit from based on the next question I have here, but we talked about separate people trying to separate the tea from our community. What can we do to bring them back in? The people that seem to be off this weird ledge, how do we bring them back in? How do we help them realize how hypocritical they're being?
So you mean, how do we bring back in the people who are...
Because they're still our tent. They're still our community. They're still yay. Why are you right. turning on so trans? So how do we reach them? How do we... Because we still need to stand together.
I think that's exactly what we say is I think you bringing up the history piece and I think that's so important and vital for people to understand the history and to say is we are one community. We are many people, identities, orientations that make up one community and we have to stick together. And even furthermore, maybe diving into this is exactly what they want is to divide us. To turn us against one another. That is why they've made the trans issue such a big issue. That's to
right.
cause more division. That is to stir up hate and to stir up othering. And that this has to do with the trans community specifically. But I don't know if you noticed this last week at all with when Renee Good was shot in Minneapolis, but she was continually, they would describe her as a lesbian. That was one of the first descriptors. And I was like, why does that matter? It matters because they are trying to other her and they are trying to divide. So I think that we have to use very specific language and very direct language and to call that division out. And I feel like when most people who are I think that most people are at the core good. And I think that perhaps PDs, people who have splintered off, maybe have some kind of fear or there's something that's causing them to do this. But I think calling this out very specifically and saying, this is what it's doing. I don't think that's what you mean for it to do. We need to stick together for all of these reasons.
It's like take the green out of a rainbow. You just can't do that.
No, exactly. Why would you want to mess up a good thing? It's just, you take the tea out. And think about all of the beauty and I don't know.
They are our brethren.
Exactly. I'm just an ally and I feel very strongly about that. So I just, yes.
Heather, thank you so much for spending your time with me today. Where can listeners connect with you and learn more about your work? And if they need to, reach out for your services.
Oh my goodness. First of all, thank you so much for having me. This was such a fun, interesting, and really meaningful conversation. People can find me in a couple of different ways. First of all, you can listen to my podcast, which is More Human, More Kind. And there is also a website for that, whatmorehumanmorekind.com. If you wish to reach me directly, you can find me through my website, my personal business website, which is heatherhester.net. Easy.
Excellent. Again, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Pride lives here.
I'm Daddy Dave, your friend in the fight to end stigma. And I'm the founder of Team Friendly, here today to talk about partner notification. If you've ever tested positive for an STI, informing past sexual partners can be a challenge, but it is an act of care. A friendly conversation can remind others the importance of testing, treating, and staying healthy. It's not about blame or shame. It's about respect, honesty, and quality healthcare for one another and owning up to the intimacy that we share. So if a past sexual partner informs you about such matters, that you might have been exposed to an STI, be cool about it. Say, thanks for letting me know, I'm on it, and be grateful that testing and if need be, treatment is available for us all. Being friendly means let's look out for each other's health.
Another reason we love this community.
What a week. From the energy building all across Phoenix, from Mr. Anvil Phoenix title contest weekend, to the moments, the connections, and the stories that remind us why this community matters so damn much. That's exactly what Gay PHX is all about. And a huge thank you to Heather Hester for joining us today, for bringing honesty, heart, and a perspective that so many people out there need to hear right now. These are the conversations that move us forward, the ones that challenge us, support us, and remind us that we're not alone in any of this. And to you, yes, you, thank you for being out there, for listening, for sharing this with someone who might need it, because what we're building here is real. It's community, it's connection, it's visibility, and it only works because you're a part of it. So if something in this episode sticks with you, please pass it on, text it to a friend, drop it in a group chat, share it with someone who needs to feel a little bit more seen today. And don't forget, you can keep the energy going 24/7 by saying, Alexa, play Gay PHX on TuneIn, or head on over to gayphx.com and jump into the live stream anytime. We're adding new voices, new music, and more of what this community makes every week. We'll see you next time. If you see us out and about, come grab a selfie with us. We love you, Phoenix.
For hanging out with the Gay PHX podcast.
Be kind.
Be bold.
Be you.